And how do you know that there's a mitzvah to save someone else's life or to help someone in danger? And we said there were, I just want to go over one last point because there may have been some confusion. We saw in the Gemara that there were two sources, right? We saw that there was Behashevotalo and Lo Tamod Al Damreyecha. Right, and we pointed out the Gemara says there's a difference between the two. If you only had Behashevotalo, you only would have thought that that which you can accomplish by yourself. And if you had Lo Tamod Al Damreyecha, then it includes even going and paying for other people. We said all of this. I just want to clarify one point. Right, so we just pointed out, so now which one, now that we have both, which one is controlling? So we said that Rav Shlomo Kluger thought that Behashevotalo is the factor that controls everything. And if you're exempt from Behashevotalo, you're exempt from everything. So he says, therefore, Zakin Veinu Fikvodo, that if it's right, if you have to return a lost item, Hashavas Aveda, you do not have to disgrace yourself to do. So if it's an older person and it's not, according to his honor, you know, schlep some dirty sheep through, that's what the Gemara says, like some dirty animal through the marketplace to return it, he's exempt from doing it. So too here. Also, Aveda Midas, that if you lose something on purpose, meaning you throw it out. So there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So too, if someone tries to take their own life, he's giving up, he's losing himself on purpose, there's no mitzvah to return it to him. And we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein responded to each one, so I just want to be clear. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, A, it's just wrong. Vashevosolo is not the controlling factor. Okay? There's both going on. There's Vashevosolo and Lo Samar Adam Reacha, and they both apply. So A, it's just wrong. Okay? These should not be exceptions. And then we went through, and even if he thinks he's right, why, according to each one, it wouldn't be true. Right? Zakin Benil Fikvoda, we said that that's only true if you wouldn't do it for yourself. But here you're obligated to do it for yourself, right? The Zakin's obligated to save his own life, so therefore he's not exempt from saving someone else's life. And Aveda Midas, Rav Moshe says, that even that you're not allowed to kill yourself. And so it can't be that because you performed an Isser, you're doing something wrong, that there's not going to be a mitzvah to save you. So he's saying that, first of all, it's wrong. The comparison is not true. Once you have both, they both apply. It's not that whenever Vashemosolo applies, then only then do we kick in Lo Samu. So that's just A. And then he says, and even if you're right, even then you're wrong. Okay? So I just wanted that to be clear. Rav Moshe's first response is, it's just not true. Okay. So now we'll move on. So we started looking at the Gemara on Yom Pehe Aleph. Yom Pehe Aleph, Yom Pehe Aleph is, we said now there's a mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. So now the question is, okay, so that's great. And so we'll get a checkbox in Shemayim, right? We did the Pikuach Nefesh, we're obligated to do it. So can we violate a prohibition, though, to accomplish it? Okay, so we said, we'll look at this Gemara as soon as it comes up. It blinks for a while. Yeah, there Alright, so right, we said, remember, you know, so, anyone know, can you violate a prohibition to save someone's life?
Yes.
Yes, right? Yes. And right, you can chal Shabbos to save someone's life. That's a classic thing. You call Hatzalah, you call an ambulance to save someone's life.
Obligated to pray.
You are, in fact, obligated to do so, and we will find out why in a moment. And we'll see in a second. And we are now, the Gemara here is just assuming, can you violate Isur? So we just pointed out, this is a very strange Gemara, just the way it's phrased. Right, it says, "Kvar ayah Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, help him b'derech." They're hanging out. They're going for a walk. They're traveling somewhere. The lady has sadar Rabbi Shmuel, but no sadar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, help nacharei. And the sadar and the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's son and Levi has sadar are there. So nishal hashayil azum ibnei minayin pikuach nefesh edoches hashabbos. How do we know pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos? And the assumption is pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos. Right, that's a given almost. We just want to know. We have that tradition. We know that's true. How do you know? And maybe how we know, we'll see, will have relevance to how it's going to play out, right? Because if it does, so who cares? So it's nice to know, but we'll see that it might have differences. And so anyone ever seen this Gemara before?
This is
Yom Pehe Amud Aleph. We'll talk about the top of the Gemara in a couple of weeks from now. But the bottom of the Gemara we're talking about now, so they give different, I'll just go through it outside because this part isn't quite as important to see inside. They give out different ideas, right? So the first one is a Baba Machteres. Nana Rabbi Shmuel Amar Imba Machteres Imotze Haganav. Right? So anyone know what Baba Machteres is? Yeah.
One who like breaks into your house, digging a tunnel.
Right. So the person who digs a tunnel to come into your house to steal stuff from you. So the Gemara, the Torah says you can kill him. You can kill him. He's just a thief. Why can you kill him? Because the Gemara says there's a chazaka. We know that you're not going to stand by and let someone steal your stuff. Right? So you know that when the Gana comes into your house, you're going to confront him. Right? And you're going to want to stop him. And the Gana then knows, he knows this, right? He knows you're going to want to stop him. So he says, well, if he's going to want to stop me, I'll kill him. Right? I'll kill you. He doesn't want you to confront him. And so, because he wants to kill you, you can kill him. Right? Everyone understand that? So Baba Machteres is someone who, he's a Ganav in such a way that he's aware of this whole psychology going on. He's prepared to kill you. He wants to steal your stuff, but he's prepared to kill you if necessary. So given that you can stay there, and he's prepared to kill you, you can proactively kill him. Haba lehargocha hashkem lehargo. If someone's coming to kill you, you can kill him first. So he says, Umaz, there's just something on Mamun, but something on the Fashospa. I don't really know why he's here. He's either coming to steal money or to kill me, right? He could just walk away. I mean, he could say, well, if you stand up to me, I'm going to run away. We're not exactly sure, but the Gemara assumes that he wants to kill you. And murder is really bad. The Torah says that murder defiles the land and it causes the Shekhinah to leave. It's also just a terrible social thing, right? We don't get into the bad. Then you can kill him. You can violate the Isser Ritzicha. You can violate the prohibition of murder, which is so terrible, which causes the land to be defiled. So certainly you can violate Shabbos. Right? If you can violate Ritzicha, you can violate Shabbos. So Ritzicha you can only violate in this context. We'll talk about it in a moment. Let's leave that aside for a minute. So Rabbi Akiva has another drasha from how to save, how to arrest a murderer. We'll see that's on the bottom there. This is just the next page. Okay. And they say, and then Rabbi Elazar, you know all these, it's just interesting to see. And then Rabbi Elazar says, what about Mila? So Bris Mila involves an Issur D'oraisa. Which Bris, what if it's on the Shabbos, right? Bris Mila removed the foreskin of the person, so what violation of Shabbos is it? You're causing a wound, right? You're not allowed to make someone believe in Shabbos. You're also finishing something. So Ma Mila, she achad me matayim v'arim v'shmona evarim, it's one of the 248 evarim of a person. We'll talk about where you get 248 from and what does that mean. But there are 248 evarim. We're not going to pretend that doesn't have an English definition. There are 248 evarim of a person, right? Dofes a Shabbos. You're allowed to violate Shabbos to save or to fix or to deal with one of the 248. So kal v'chomer l'chol dofes a dofes a Shabbos, right? If you're going to fix or save the whole body, all 248, certainly you can violate Shabbos. If for one you can, so for two, the other 247 or 248, setting all of them together, you certainly can. Very interesting. Okay, the next one's the important one here that I want to focus on. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ed Shabso Saiti Shmoro. No, sorry, I'm going to the next one. So, another couple of riots. Sorry, Rabbi Shimon ben Benassi. That's what it sounds like. Rabbi Shimon ben Benassi Omer, Vishamru bnei Yisrael es HaShabbos. Right? Everyone familiar? You say that's Kiddush, right? On Shabbos morning, Vishamru bnei Yisrael es HaShabbos. Bnei Yisrael should keep the Shabbos. So he explains that pasuk as saying Amr Torah, Chalil Alav Shabbos Achas, Kadei Sheyishmor Shabbos Harbe. You know what that means?
Sacrifice one to keep alive.
Right. So let's write. This is important to see it outside. So Chalil Alav Shabbos Achas. Right, chalal from the word chilul, to violate or desecrate. Desecrate on him for his sake one Shabbos, kedei, so that he can keep many Shabboses in the future, right? Sacrifice one Shabbos now, violate Shabbos today, and he will live and be able to keep Shabbos in the future. Okay? We'll talk about that in a second, right? Many of the words here are important, and we'll pick this apart carefully. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Ivayah. He says, if I was there, right, they were all on this trip. He goes, if I was there, I think that didia difa miditu. My limud, my place to learn it from is better than theirs. Okay? Why? V'chai bohem. The Tosfos Torah says v'loshi yomos bohem. Right? We talked about this last time. V'chai bohem. The Torah says in Vayikra, Eila ha-mitzvos asher ya'aseh ha-adam otam. These are the mitzvos that you should do. V'chai bohem, and you should live through them. And the simple reading is, you live through the mitzvos gives you life, and that's how you live a Torah life. And we say, v'chai bohem, and he says, no, v'lo sh'yomus bohem. You're supposed to be able to live and do the mitzvos and not die through the mitzvos. So a mitzvah shouldn't cause you to have to give up your life. So if you say, look, this person's dying, the only way to save him is to get him to a hospital, which involves driving a car, which is nisa d'oraisa. We'll talk about that, but it certainly is nisa d'oraisa, driving a car. I can't violate the Shabbos to save his life. We say, no, you don't have to give up. You don't have to give up your life to keep the mitzvos. Okay? Yes?
Isn't there an issue for driving back, though?
Let's say driving back. Okay. Aside, we're talking about driving to the hospital. You're going to save this man's life. Driving back, you're not saving anybody's life anymore, right?
Right.
Okay. But we will have a share about driving back, which is more complicated.
Taxis,
hmm?
The taxis that aren't...
There are taxis, whether it's an ambulance, right? Meaning, we're talking about, can you drive? So you can certainly drive, right? If someone had a heart attack, you can call an ambulance, you can call Hatzalah, Hatzalah can drive you to the hospital. No question, okay? So, okay. So he says, it's not convincing. Violate one Shabbos to keep the other ones. And you'll say that applies to all the mitzvahs. Violate the mitzvah now, so he can keep it, otherwise he'll be dead. So violate the mitzvah now, and then he'll be able to keep it in the future. So why is v'chai bohem so much better? So Amar Rava, l'kulu islu pircha, barbi yishmul delesli pircha. Anybody know what pircha is? It's like a refutation. No, it's a refutation. Because I can refute all of these rayas, all of these limudim from the Torah, except for Shmuel's. Okay? And he goes through refuting each and every one. And Hannes, right? He goes through refute, right? There's a whole bunch of limudim here, and he refutes in each and every one. Right? He says, Barbi Yishmael, the last lepir. But Rabbi Yishmael, who said that if from Bavar Peres, he tells you why. Okay? And keeps going. And he says, but that's only a case where my life is certainly, where the person's life is certainly in danger, right? Where the ganav is coming to certainly kill the balabais, the person whose house it is. Suffik minalan, how do you know if your life, you're not sure the person, I mean, you think he has a heart attack, maybe he'll make it. You don't know. So he's not certainly dying, he's questionably dying. Can you still violate Shabbos?
Yes.
So yes, so the answer is yes. Okay, the answer is yes. That's how he passed minalach lamaisa. And now we'll get to how we get to that, okay? The answer is yes. There should be no question in anyone's mind. Okay, how do we get to that? Well, certainly not from this pasuk. That says, Ashkechan vadeh, sabi minalan. So we go through all of the different, right? We go through all of the different limudim here, right? It says, the kulu, and according to all of them, Ashkechan vadeh, sabi minalan. All of them are only in the cases of when your life is certainly in danger. You are going to certainly die. When you're going to certainly die, so... violate one Shabbos, because you're going to certainly die. You won't live till the next Shabbos. So we'll be able to keep another Shabbos. So, minalan, u'dishmuel v'adei leslo pircha. Right? Shmuel, v'chai v'hem means you should live by them, even in the case of suffering. Okay? We paskin v'chai v'hem. We paskin, we violate any mitzvah, any violation of the Torah, to save not only from certain death, even from probable death. Like, one second, which is important while we're grandstanding here, except for three averos, which we'll say it again. Right, shvichas dami. You may not kill one person to save another. You may not violate a vodazara in order to save a life, and you may not violate one of the iser arayos, one of the illicit relationships that are defined as arayos, to save a life. So murder is an important one, right? A vodazara and a gilui arayos don't usually come up. Shvichas dami can come up, which we'll talk about. Yes.
So why is it clearer from the five that even in a case of uncertainty?
Right, so the assumption is that you have to be able to live by them. And this is going to help you live by them, even if it's only questionable, you can... That's the Gemara is assuming that that's...
I understand what you're saying. I mean,
why is it clear in the Psukim?
Yeah.
The Gemara assumes it is. Okay? But so we're going to assume that the Chai Bahim at least includes the possibility of something. Right? They can't come... Meaning there's no specific reason not to. For each of the other ones, they come for a specific reason. It only applies to when your life is certainly in danger. But Chai Bahim, there's no reason to say certainly or not certainly.
Then what's the problem? Why can't you say the same thing?
by the Habala Argacha? Because he's certainly coming to kill you, we assume.
No, but...
Chalala?
Yeah.
So you can so the Gemara doesn't actually specifically say, right? It just assumes that cool. It goes through the first three, and then says, yeah, and the rest also. So it doesn't say specifically, so there's a little bit of a discussion. So they assume you can violate one Shabbos in order to keep another Shabbos. So, well, is he going to keep another Shabbos or not? If the only you know, permission to violate one Shabbos is to keep another Shabbos, so I need to know that he's going to keep another Shabbos.
And you need to know that he's not going to below Shiyamut. You need to know that he's going to die. I don't see why it's any different.
I see what you're saying. The assumption is that the chayva and that he should live. So we're going to assume that we can do it. Oh, I see what you're saying. The Gemara assumes not like that. So we'll take it as it is.
So the first three are refuted because they don't hold one to the
suffix. Right, the first three say only vaday, and then the Gemara says, yeah, and the rest of them also are only vaday, except for the last one. They don't exactly tell you why. So the Echron talk about why, but it's not really our issue. Okay. So now, when I said we paskin now, again, clearly you can violate any issur except the big three for certain risk to life or even a question of risk to life. Leaving your question aside, which is a good question, we'll leave it aside. So what happens to the first couple of limudim, right? These are all pesukim in the Torah. They exist. So do we care that they exist? Was this just a nice gemara that told us, we want to know how to derive this law, and so we'll go through a bunch of trial and error, we'll go through the first couple. Doesn't work out, we'll find the next one. Yeah.
Can we learn bad things from them?
Can we learn other things from them, maybe? Maybe it applies in other areas of halacha. And so you're saying, no, the chai bahem is the bottom line. And once I have the chai bahem, I don't really need the other ones.
Why is killer ass so important that it can violate
it? Okay, we'll talk about it another time. It's a different gemara. We'll talk about it. But we assume it is, and it's a pasuk. We'll talk about it. Yeah.
The pasuk about halal shabbat hakeh, that's in talking about a case where it's badai that the guy is going to die or the woman's going to die.
Yeah.
Did you say where you know that you could know either Shabbos to save someone's suffix?
The Chaybahim. The Gemara assumes that the Chaybahim includes suffix. Right? That's what this Gemara says. The Chaybahim includes suffix. So the Achronim try to say, well, we have all these limudim, and some of them are going to say, once we have the Chaybahim, like you said, once we have the Chaybahim, the others are gone, and the Chaybahim is the only thing that's operative. If the Chaybahim applies, then it applies, even in a place of suffix. And if it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. Some of them... Our friend is going to say, well, no, v'chai b'hem, they're all true, and v'chai b'hem only comes to supplement that which the others didn't have. Okay, so they come up with cases where v'chai b'hem shouldn't apply. So there's a question. The Ramban, the Torah Sa'adam, he says, he wants to know, can a woman eat on Yom Kippur in order to save her fetus? She's pregnant. The fetus is somehow in danger. If she does not eat, the fetus will not make it. She will be fine. She'll be emotionally distraught. But she will not die. The fetus's life is in danger. Can she eat on Yom Kippur?
Yes.
Why? So, again, halach l'maisa, yes. Now we're going to get to that. Yeah?
Depends how you define, what you define a live person.
Okay. Right, so, yeah.
Does it depend on the 40-day thing?
Maybe, maybe not. Let's assume after 40 days. That we'll get to maybe another time. Your point is well taken, and we'll assume we're after 40 days. Okay? So, there's a machlokas. The Bahag, the Baal HaLachos Gadol, one of the Goanim, says, no, you violate Shabbos to save life of the fetus. And the Ramban quotes another opinion, whether it's the Ramban's opinion or not the Ramban's opinion, he says, no. You can't violate Yom Kippur or Shabbos, the assumption is, to save the life of the fetus unless the mother's life is in danger. So the Nitzit...
Does it matter that...
We pass on like Bahad. Yeah.
See, we're talking about violating for the sake of... Does it matter who's violating? You
know what I mean? We're assuming
she's
not.
The one violating.
We're assuming not.
For the sake of this other being or whatever. But in the case of somebody that needs to go to the hospital on Shabbos, they said both are violating. One person's violating by calling the ambulance, but the other person's, he's dying, or not dying, he's ailing, but he's riding the car also.
So
he's to save his own life, and the other person's violating to save this other person's life.
Right, so
the fetus isn't violating anything, and I don't know if they're have to keep the mitzvahs or anything.
Right, so you're pointing out something interesting. So we are going to assume now, and we'll talk about Shabbos, that if someone's life is in danger, because I have a mitzvah to save that person, the V'chai B'hem applies to me also. I can also violate an Isser to save another person. That's A. Riding in the car might be something different. We'll talk about that in Shabbos things. But we're going to assume for now that because I have a mitzvah to save your life, right? I'll say you. I don't really mean anyone, God forbid, in the room should have this problem. Right? If I have a mitzvah to save your life, so then I can also violate the Chayvim to do so. So, the Nitziv, yeah?
Is the person himself also violating, in a sense?
It depends what that person's doing. It's a very technical question. If that person's doing an Isser, so then yes. If not, no. You know, so he's riding in the car in Israel, we'll talk about it. He certainly can. Oh,
right,
he certainly can. Everyone can.
I'm just wondering if there's a differentiation between like, the fetus case.
Where the fetus isn't doing anything.
Right,
we'll take a comatose patient who can't really do anything. You still have mitzvah to save him, even though he can't do anything himself.
Same thing with that guy. He can't do anything either.
Right.
He's in,
right. So we'll talk about that when we get through the Shabbos cases, where it becomes a little bit more relevant, but you're right. So the Nitziv says like this. The fetus is not alive. Okay? We're going to assume. And therefore, v'chaibahim doesn't apply. Right, you can't v'chaibah him. You can't violate his life. You can't violate Shabbos to save his life. There's no v'chaibah him. Right, because v'chaibah him is, and you should live by him. He's not alive, not yet alive. Right, so that's what the Ramban says. He says, wait, but the other limudim are still relevant. So what about chalal olav Shabbos achas kedei sheyishmor Shabbos osar bo? Right, we're going to assume that most fetuses make it. Right, most fetuses, you know, make it to be born. So can I violate one Shabbos now, and then he'll be able to save Shabbos in the future? What do you think?
Yeah.
Right? And Nitziv says, well, that's a valid limud. Yeah.
Well, before we said that that the first one doesn't apply to a suffix. So
exactly.
So it's a suffix at this point. So
we're going to assume he'll live. We assume that most fetuses make it.
But we just said in this case that
his life's,
you need to eat because you're going to save the fetus's life.
Right.
So if you don't eat,
he will die, certainly die. And if I eat, he will certainly live, let's assume. So then you're hitting the exact point. So Nitziv says, if what I'm doing to save him will certainly save him, meaning to the best of our ability, to the best of our knowledge, will certainly save him, you can do it. If it's only questionable, then you can't do it. So it doesn't matter. You want no medicine. Nitziv's not interested in medicine.
Okay.
So, right, just almost the Rosh point, meaning the Rosh already, he's one of the Rishonim points out, he says, this is rare. Come on. Whenever the fetus's life is going to be at risk, the mother's life is going to be at risk also. So this is a nice theoretical discussion, but almost never applicable. Also, eating on Yom Kippur, there are ways, meaning it's very hard to come up with a real construct where this would be. We'll come up with another one where it, also I can't come up with a construct where it will be. And the Rosh, right, he's one of the Rishonim. I mean, you don't need modern medicine to tell you this isn't going to happen. Yeah. Yes, it's considered to be alive in a certain sense. For this, the Nitziv is assuming that V'chaibahim does not apply because he's not alive yet. But Chalal of Shabbos Achas, meaning violate one Shabbos now for the potential it'll be able to keep in the future, so it'll be able to keep in the future. But as Spence pointed out, that's precisely, but only if it's Vaday, right? Chalal will only allow you, if he's certainly going to die, and what you're going to do is going to save him. So if that's true, so then it's okay. But if it's a Suffolk, then you can't. And the Ramban, indeed, later says, it seems to indicate that if it's Vaday, you can violate Shabbos.
Doesn't using the Vaday to Shabbos now that he's considered alive now?
Not necessarily. Okay. Violate Shabbos now so that he will be able to keep Shabbos in the future. He is something,
but
right?
Not,
he exists.
But he's not obligated to keep Shabbos now anyway, so he's not violating anything.
Right, but even a child's not obligated to keep Shabbos either. I mean, one day he'll be 13, he'll keep the Shabbos. Yeah?
The Chayvahim, then instead of not considering the fetus alive to the extent that it fits into Chayvahim, it makes sense because he doesn't live by mitzvahs. You know, it's
right.
Not necessarily just alive, not alive. It's high by
right. So I mean, he's not. He's v'chaibah he, doesn't apply, but neither
right.
The child doesn't necessarily
right.
Have to live by mitzvahs
right.
Either.
Right.
A 5 year old,
right.
Well, it certainly
right.
Applies.
Right.
There's an immediate right. A 5 year old doesn't have to live by mitzvahs either, but we certainly violate Shabbos for a 5 year old, even though v'chaibah, because he can. Yeah.
Can we also just use when the first pasuk uses Shabbos, we can say any mitzvah that will be able to keep in the future.
Yes.
It doesn't really. Understand.
It doesn't necessarily mean Shabbos specifically, but it's going. So let's just write the list of nafkamina. Right, nafkamina are differences between the cases. So the first one is ubar. I was going to give you the words. Ubar means fetus. So can you violate Shabbos to save the fetus's life? And then the Nitziv says, well, it depends, right? Is it v'chai? What happens to these limudim? Does v'chai bahem come and say everything else we did doesn't apply? So v'chai bahem is now going to encompass everything, and so you'll say you can save Shabbos. Right? What does v'chai say? But what's the what is the Bahag thing? The Baal Chos Golo says
you can't.
He says you can. Why? He's not alive. Does he argue with the Ramban that the fetus is considered alive or not? What does the Baha'i think? Why? Because either he thinks he's alive, he disagrees with the Ramban, assuming it's the Ramban, says that he's not alive, so he could be disagreeing whether he's alive or not, or that the Chayvahim applies to all the situations, right? Meaning there is no case wherever Chalal of Shabbos Achas is going to apply, the Chayvahim is going to apply. He's saying the Chayvahim supersedes everything. So wherever anything applies, wherever any of them, and usually only Chalal of Shabbos Achas is the one that's going to be relevant, whenever Chalal of Shabbos Achas applies, the Chayvahim applies also, right? And then Nitziv is going to say, no. The Chalal of Shabbos Achas covers certain circumstances, and the Chayvahim covers other circumstances. So the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, right, that's the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he wrote a Shulchan Aruch. It's called Shulchan Aruch HaRav. And he says you can eat it on Yom Kippur even if it's only suffering, right? There's only a doubt that the fetus is in danger. You don't know for sure, right? So the last Lubavitcher Rebbe in an article, he says, you see from here, that even when the permission is Chalalav, right? When either one is from Chalalav, that the Chaybahem applies. So whenever Chalalav applies, the Chaybahem applies. And you would say for the Ramban, no. Who says that that's true? They're differently moved and they apply in different cases. Yeah?
You're saying that not alive,
and
how does the
Chayvahim
apply?
So once you agree Chalalav applies, right?
Yeah, but...
So the assumption is that...
You had only said the Chayvahim applies in the Suffolk case before because the person, you know...
So that's how the Ramban explains it. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe is pointing out in that article that once Chalalav applies, right, we agree it applies, then it's encompassed within Suffolk. Then it's encompassed within the Chayvahim, right? Once Chalalav applies... No, so he's saying, though, that once any of these is triggered, they're all triggered together. The din of all of them is triggered together, right? It's not that they're not each separately mudim. They're each part and parcel of this larger din. Whenever you trigger one, you trigger also the chaybahim. Okay?
That's what the symptom doesn't say.
He's not saying that. Whether he would agree to that point or not, I don't know. He might agree that that's possible.
Who's the one that said that you're allowed to eat because of
So the Nitziv is explaining that that's for the Ramban. The Ramban says you can't violate Shabbat. You can't eat on Yom Kippur to save the fetus.
You can't.
Right? Because he's saying that's a case of when it's only a suffix. Right? And therefore, Chalalav doesn't apply. And to a fetus, only Chalalav applies. And therefore, you can't eat to save the baby. Just the baby if it's a suffix, right? Suffix. And the Baha'i would say, seemingly like Lubavitcher. Okay. So the next case is also, I can't find a medical condition for this, but, so Tosos above Mitzia, the Gemara there says, Pinchas hu Eliyahu. Yeah?
I'm so confused. I understand what the Rabbi said, but what does it say again?
He's pointing out that what is the disagreement, why does the Ramban say what he says?
Okay.
He says the reason you can't save the baby because of the Chaybahem, because he's not alive. Or he's not the Chaybahem. He won't live. If I violate Shabbos, he's not living right now. Right? Maybe that's a better way to say it. He's not living, he won't live a moment after I'm done. So that doesn't apply. So Chalalav, though, sacrifice one mitzvah with the potential of performing many mitzvahs in the future, applies. But he said, that only applies, the Gemara says, Ashkechan Vaday Savek Minalan, when there's a certainty where I'm certain that I'll be able to save it, but I'll be successful, right, to the best of my knowledge. I'll be certain. So he says, well, if you're certain that eating will save his life, then that's fine. If you're uncertain, it's questionable, then you can't. Okay, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe is just pointing out that halacha l'maaseh, how does it work out? We paskin that you do, so we have to assume that once, like you pointed out, once we trigger any of these limudim, everything kicks in. So once we trigger chalalav, then that's encompassed already within v'chaybahem, and therefore even suffik. Right? So when it says, once v'chaybahem teaches suffik, it means apply suffik to everything, effectively. Right? Once we know suffik, even though you can't prove from each of the other ones suffik, it applies to suffik as well. Okay. So the Gemara about Mitzia says a Pinchas hu Eliyahu, right? There's like a Sephardi piyut, the Pinchas hu Eliyahu. So the Pinchas is Eliyahu Navi, whatever that means. He's the same neshama, he's the same person. Tosfos takes this very literally, and there is one quality of Pinchas that bothers Tosfos. Pinchas was a Kohen, right? That makes Eliyahu Navi a Kohen. Tosfos is assuming Pinchas hu Eliyahu, so Pinchas is a Kohen. So Eliyahu Navi is a Kohen. Right? So, anyone know there's a story in Sefer Melachim which seems to be a problem?
Does it kill people?
No.
No, he touches the dead boy.
He touches the dead boy, right? There's a dead boy. There's a boy, right? Eliyahu comes and he tries to save his life. So we'll talk about Tumas Kohanim extensively. A Kohen cannot be in the same room as a dead body. He cannot touch a dead body.
So they should actually bring...
That's, they both do.
They do together?
No. Two different cases.
Oh, he wasn't technically, was he fully dead? Like there's levels of death?
No, he's dead. Oh, he's dead. If you need a Navi to intercede on your behalf, then you are dead. We're going to assume that he is dead. Okay? He is Mitame Ba'ol, and the Gemara actually asks. The Gemara asks by Ben Hashinamis, Ma'u say Yitame when he comes back? Right, so the Ben Hashanamis, I think it was by Elisha. I remember which one it was. So the Ben Hashanamis is one of the boys who was resurrected. And they ask, when he comes back, when he's dead, and then he's alive again. So does he still cause tumah like a dead body? Right? And that's true. I mean, he's walking around. Right? So the Gemara says, no. Meis metameh and chai metameh. We'll talk about this extensively. So a dead person is metameh and a live person is not. So the Rishonim explain, yeah, but when he was dead, then he was metameh. Right. No. So we're going to talk about news. We're just talking about just in general. Did he cause tumah? Forget. We're not. We just want to know. Does he cause tumah? So the Gemara says, well, yeah, he caused tumah because he was dead. When he's alive, he doesn't cause it. When he's dead, he does. So the assumption is he's really, really dead. The question is though, because he touched himself when he became alive, right? So there was a moment where he was dead and he was alive. So did he mitame himself? That's what they want to know. That's the Gemara's question. But he was really dead. So Eliyahu now becomes. And he's going to save his life. And he enters the room and he touches him and he brings him back. Right? So Tosfos wants to know, why was he allowed to do this?
Because he's just lying on top of like...
Yeah, so he's touching him. He's in the room. Why can he do this? Yeah? Right. So, okay. But that's going to be limited, right? So, Tosfos says the following. Eichikoch nefesh. So it's okay. You can violate.
He's already dead.
But he resurrected. So right, so that's a problem. And he says, the problem is that Tosfos says the following. Varu lo sheyachayehu. It was clear to him that he'll come back. Right? So it's hitting on your point.
Yeah,
so Nitziv points out, well, if it's Bipach Nefesh, I don't need certainty. Right? V'chaybahim. I don't need certainty. And if it's Varu lo sheyachayehu, then of course, right? Why do you need Varu lo sheyachayehu? Right? If it's Pekach Nefesh, why did he borrow Lo Shechayehu? Right? Something. So he says, why? Because he's dead. He's not V'chai Behem. V'chai Behem doesn't apply to dead people. Right? He's no... When I'm done... Right? He's dead. So V'chai Behem doesn't apply. Then he should live by them. He's gone. So there's no V'chai Behem. So the only limud that's going to apply is Chalal of Shabbos Achas, like you're saying. Violate one mitzvah to save another. Right? You can violate one Shabbos to perform another Shabbos. Now, this is a little bit different because he's violating the prohibition of a Kohen being Tameh in order to child fulfill other mitzvahs, so he's not a Kohen. Let's assume that that's okay, though. You can violate one mitzvah in order to enable someone else to perform more, but the Gemara said that's only when Vadai, right? Only when I know for sure that I'll save his life. So that's what Tosfos had to say, Baru lo sheyachayehu. He knew for sure he would save him, right? He's a Navi, so he can know these things. So he knew it would come back, so he knew it was okay. Right? So it applies to the resurrection things. I call it Piyas Amazing. Right? The assumption is V'chai Behem doesn't apply. Chalav applies, and therefore you have to be certain. And Tosfos, in fact, he says it's Pekach Nefesh, which is strange. And Bar Lo Sheikhayev. So why? Why? Because only Chalav only applies, and the Tosfos explains when it's Vavai. Yeah.
Was Eliyahu Tameh afterwards?
So was Eliyahu Tameh afterwards? The assumption is yes, but it was okay. Right? Because the Gemara assumes that when he was dead, he was really dead. Okay. So just a couple other cases. So the Shulchan Aruch says, so, you know, in the Middle Ages, there was this problem that sometimes the surrounding Gentiles and Gaim would come in and steal children and take them to become part of their families and to, you know, be baptized and to live as Christians.
Hmm?
So it's like a connection, but so can you violate Shabbos to prevent this? If they're coming into your city, like, we don't want to kill anybody. No one's life is at risk. No one's life is at risk. So can you go and violate Shabbos to go and rescue that kid? Right? It used to happen with kids. So can you go and violate Shabbos? Let's say you have to go past the Tchum Shabbos. You're not allowed to go more than 2,000 hours outside the city on Shabbos. and they are on horses, and they come in and go out. So you're going to have to go on the horse and go out. So going on the horse, this is Rabban. So going past the tchum might be a daraisa.
It's halal. You can apply both, so you can say that the child is not going to have their Shabbos in the future, and he's not going to live through those mitzvahs. So he can't live up to that.
Okay.
Interesting. Are you allowed to rent a captive on Shabbos? Is that
it? If it's assuming it's Pekach Nefesh, certainly.
So why can't you make that assumption?
So we're assuming they say we're going to believe them. So Lemaisa, we say, well, you don't know that they're going to really live.
Why would we believe them? Wait.
Right, okay, so then we're going to do it anyway. So Rabbi Sachs and the Shir want to say, well, it might depend on Chalalah versus B'chai B'hem. Right? There's no B'chai B'hem. There's no risk to life. If, meaning in this situation where there's no risk to life, we're saying in most situations there might be risk to life. Like an actual physical risk to life, we're saying more than that. But if there's an actual physical risk to life, how can you believe him? He just came in and stole your kid. Like, you're going to believe it. Yeah, we won't kill him, really. We promise. That's crazy. So let's assume there's no risk to life, so it might be dependent on chalal. So b'chayim doesn't apply. So chalal might apply, but only in a case where you know you'll be able to rescue him back. So practically, this doesn't happen because there's almost always a risk to life. You're pointing out that v'chai b'hem might say, well, what do you mean there's no risk to life? To live as a Christian, or to throw away Judaism, that's already a risk to life. And we're going to explain life a little bit more broadly. It's not just a risk to your physical life, but this is a risk to life. To have to worship a Fodazara almost, that's a risk to life, and so it'll be okay. So regardless, we do violate Shabbos, but in theory at least, it might be relevant to this question.
What if you claim that it's not a Fodazara, and
so then maybe, I mean, I'm not saying that people who live as non-Jews do not live, but I'm saying that the person who was Jewish, for them to forsake everything, that might not be. So maybe then only if Chalal law might apply, and only if it's certain that you can do it, then you can violate the Doraisa on Shabbos. So just two other cases, so let's just do it right there.
So just Chalal law, that's all
right. In theory, right? This is a theoretical case. Practically, it's not going to apply on this. But in theory, if that were the case, then Rabbi Sachs suggested that it might depend on this.
Which Rabbi Sachs?
Rabbi Yonason Sachs, from why he was giving a share on this. Shmad, I'm sorry. Shmad means to not baptize is a name where you become a Christian, not say you become a Christian. There's an English equivalent to that word, but I can't think of it right now. Proselytize means just to come and convince you to be part of my religion. That's more of a benign, like, this is more like we're forcing you.
Forced
conversion to Christianity, fine, for the sake of argument, in Hebrew, Shmad. Some other cases, just clever ones. The Rav Shlomo Kluger, if you recall him, Rav Shlomo Kluger, he says, let's assume for the sake of argument you cannot violate Shabbos. We'll talk about Shabbos extensively.
Uber?
Uber. And Uber is a fetus.
So what did we say? We said only if it's for sure, only if they're definitely going to...
In theory, right? If there's no risk to life, only if you can definitely save them, can you violate Shabbos. Right? In theory, according to Mahalo. So if Shlomo Kluger says the following, assume for the moment, so we can violate Shabbos to save someone's life, even the suffix of risk to life. What if someone's going to become blind? Right? Someone has a risk to their eyes, there's no risk to the rest of their body. Now, halach lamaisa, if someone loses vision in one or both eyes, you rush to a hospital because you could be having a stroke.
Can we consider them dead? Somebody
maybe, but not really. In some contexts, yes, but
not for moments.
Oh, so that's his point, right? So let's assume this just goes through for a second. The assumption is we're not going to violate Shabbos with the Rice or Quinter, or some Kluger at least, to save somebody from blindness. We'll talk extensively whether we pass it that way, what the stuntim are, how that works out. Let's assume that's his assumption. You will not violate, right? So he says, though, but a person who's blind is exempt from mitzvos. Right? So he's going to live, and we will assume for the sake of argument he will live a full life. Right, his life will not be shortened by being blind, from what it would have been earlier.
These putter from blind men today, or putter
according to many posts, are putter for mitzvahs, yeah.
All mitzvahs.
Positive. Oh, no, everyone who's exempt is only exempt from positive mitzvahs. Everyone's obligated to negative mitzvahs. That's just clear, right? You can't go around murdering people, and you can't eat not kosher. He might not have to kill the blind. I mean, he can't make a bruch, right? So even if he's going to be obligated, he's going to be obligated on a different level than someone who can see. So he can't make a bracha and you be yotze with it, right? Because you're not obligated. Even if he is, he's not obligated at the same level. So he says, yeah, so he's not going to die. Let's assume. right? And it's probably true, especially today, that blind people probably will live a full productive life, but he will be exempt from mitzvos. So can you violate Shabbos for chalal of Shabbos achas kedei shiyishmer Shabbos harbin? Because if he's not obligated to keep Shabbos in the future, because he'll be exempt, right, the positive commandments, I can violate one mitzvah to help him produce more in the future. So he says maybe that's dependent on the same question, and if it would be certain, it would be okay.
He can still fulfill the Shabbos.
But he's kein mitzvah, right, so it's not the same.
Right.
Wait, he's going blind and he wants to stop going blind? Or he's blind?
He just lost his vision.
Okay.
So is he blind or not? I don't know. It depends if I get him to a hospital or not. Right? I don't know why he's lost
his vision. What if it's the case of a blind person who was hit by a car?
So a blind person is just like any other person. We violate Shabbos to save his life. We're talking about to save his vision.
Oh, fine.
I'm sorry, maybe that wasn't clear. We're talking about to save the man's vision, right? Someone all of a sudden is walking down the street, all of a sudden they can't see, and there's a doctor there who says, no risk to life. Can you violate Shabbos to save his vision? So if Shlomo Kluger wants to say, well, maybe that's dependent on the same question, right? Maybe it's dependent on, there's no problem, there's no fechai behind it, his life's not at risk. So there's only chalal alav, and if there's only chalal alav, it's only okay if you can certainly save his life, as opposed to only questionably do so. Okay, halach lamaisa, if anyone loses vision, you always go to a hospital because you don't know what's wrong with you. Yeah.
Even if a doctor's right there and says this person will absolutely not die, it will just lose vision.
So then we'll talk about it. But so long as there is no ophthalmologist with a scope looking in your eyes right now, halach lamaisa, you violate justice.
These keys are not practical at all.
This is just to make a point, the differences between the limudim. We'll talk about blindness when it comes to Shabbos. You'll never have a doctor standing next to you with a scope, and we're concerned you're having a stroke.
What if I poke your eye?
Practically.
And we know it's not a stroke. I just poke your eye.
We'll talk about that when it comes to Shabbos. Does the loss of vision allow for full Shabbos? And what type of full Shabbos is it? So, certain yes, certain no. It's complicated. It's not like yes or no. It's certain things yes, certain things no. So,
what's the two things? What did you say was the law of mind?
If anyone is walking in the street and all of a sudden cannot see, you go to a hospital immediately.
And
just because I don't know why you can't see, and maybe it's something systemic that's going to kill you.
So the stroke possibility is because of the...
So you'll die. Yeah. You threw a clot to your retinal artery or something. Okay, which is bad, very bad. Yeah.
So as of right... So what was Rav Shlomo Kluger's theory?
He's saying that if a person has the loss of vision, right, is not a risk to life. In the case of a loss of vision that is not a risk to life, you cannot violate Shabbos because of the chayvah, because there's no risk to life. You can violate Shabbos, he says, because of chalal alav, because the blind person is going to be exempt from mitzvos. So I will allow him to perform mitzvos in the optimal way. Right? Even the person who's exempt can perform mitzvos, but it's not gadol ha-mitzuvah ve'osa, mish'enu mitzuvah ve'osa. A person who is obligated and performs the mitzvah is doing it at a different level than a person who's volunteering to perform that mitzvah. So I will enable him to perform the mitzvah as a mitzvah goes, the one who's commanded to do it. So he says, okay, but it's chalal alav, it's only in the case of certainty, not in the case of something. Okay. Fine. One last case, which is also, because we're talking about non-halacha l'maisa cases. What if a person will not make it till next Shabbos? He won't make it till next Shabbos. His life, he's in the hospital, he's in the ICU. Can I violate Shabbos to save him? He will not live any longer. He will not live till next. He'll certainly not live till next Shabbos. Right. So l'chayvah. Right. So halacha l'maisa, violate Shabbos. So the question is, according to some Rishonim, one know. Yeah.
He is a
ghost. Okay.
So is that good?
We'll talk about that. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about it. Maybe next time. Maybe the time after. Yeah. Don't worry. We will talk about ghosts. Yes.
What if the person's special? Like literally just restarting the.
We'll talk about that also. So the Ran, though, that's halacha l'maisa, we can save his life, right? You're allowed to violate Shabbos. We'll talk about if you have to violate Shabbos or not, but you're certainly allowed to violate Shabbos. And does the doctor have a right to say, well, he's not going to live till next Shabbos? Meaning, or does he say, no, his life's at risk now, you can save him? Meaning, does his prediction have any relevance to halacha or not? So we'll talk about it. And it could be a statistical prediction. So the Ran wants to say, even if we didn't have a chayvahim, even if we had chalal of Shabbos achas, kadesh yishmer Shabbos harbe, it's very theoretical, right? Because even if we don't have the maskana, even if you don't have the last line of the Gemara, you still violate Shabbos to save it. Why? Shema yaharher b'tshuva. So this is not relevant to this chayir, but because the person might be tshuva. In those couple of minutes, right? You'll give him another hour, you'll give him another day, he won't keep another Shabbos, but he'll do tshuva.
This is the Ron.
Yeah.
He says this in response to a specific question that's specifically phrased.
phrase, what if the doctor says he'll live till next Shabbos?
Right, he's talking in the case of the person will not live till next Shabbos, and we don't have a chayvah. Now, we do have a chayvah.
There's no way to ever be sure of
that. Right, we're not sure, so that's A. And B, so we can say statistically, and B, we have a chayvah. Right, we're talking in the half a minute of the Gemara. Yeah.
Where do you see that doing the tshuva is a valid argument to
say? Sorry, Tabori said the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik. So what does tshuva do? So he says, so this is not relevant. This is not relevant to the suffix and the vale. It's just interesting because it's before Rosh Hashanah. So he says, tshuva does the following. So we assume that you can do, you know, time is linear, right? You go forward in time. He says, halacha doesn't necessarily assume that way. So when you do tshuva on a Shabbos that you didn't keep, it's as if you're keeping that Shabbos, the Gemara says, right? Zdonos nasaluka mitzvahs. The averus you did can turn into mitzvahs, right? So if I do tshuva in a minute from now, it's as if I kept Shabbos 3 days ago, or last week, or last year. It's as if I'm keeping it now. So you want to say that based on this, it's you can violate one Shabbos to save another Shabbos in the past, right? It's a Shabbos that I did in the, that I'm keeping in the past, but I'm being fulfilling it in the future.
The Rav said that?
Yeah, the Rav says that. He talks about it in halachic mind, which is, I think he talks about it in halachic mind.
Why can't you just say, if tshuva is in itself a mitzvah, why can't you just say that by saving him, you have the opportunity to do the mitzvah, just say, halalav Shabbos, avatar,
right, so A, tshuva might be a mitzvah. Is tshuva a mitzvah or not? Okay, that's a discussion. Or is vidui a mitzvah?
What, right? Any mitzvah. You say so cover an extra 2 hours.
So the Chassid Sofer assumes that this doesn't apply. He says, we mentioned before, we're assuming it applies to all mitzvahs. And not only all mitzvahs, like violate Shabbos to keep Shabbos, violate Mila to keep Mila, it can go violate Shabbos to keep Mila. You can cross them. He says it only applies to one mitzvah. Violate Shabbos to keep Shabbos.
Why?
That's his assumption. The Chassid Sofer tries to prove it based on the Gemara's. That you can violate Shabbos to say, keep Shabbos. So assuming that that's true, you just want to put in the, like, this isn't relevant to the Sadik and Fadai case. It's just interesting for when you think about going into Rosh Hashanah, it's Chodesh Elul, going into Yom Kippur, that when we do tshuva, we can actually accomplish things that we didn't in the past. It's as if, and according to what you explained the Rambam, it's as if you're keeping Shabbos. Right? On Sunday, it's as if you kept 50 Shabboses. And so therefore, it's okay. Okay? That's a little bit theoretical. Okay. Fine. So much for Pikuach Nefesh. I'd like now to move on to the next halachas in Shulchan Aruch are about Bikur Cholim. And Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, is one of those often overlooked mitzvahs. We don't really take it so seriously. There are halachos of how to do Bikur Cholim properly. There are halachos of what you are supposed to, what you should try to accomplish in Bikur Cholim, and how to do that. So there's a machlokas Rishonim, whether mitzvah Bikur Cholim is midoraisa or midrabanan. Does the Torah require you to do Bikur Cholim? Do the rabbis require you to do Bikur Cholim? Again, it's an interesting discussion, not really for us at this time. So what are you trying to accomplish when you do Bikur Cholim, right? Anyone ever do like real Bikur Cholim, right? Like in a hospital? Yeah, you don't have to admit, right? It's extremely uncomfortable, especially if you're going to Mavakar some Yom Kippur. So often when we're hoping this person will get better, right? So let's assume it's someone who we know, when it's a relative, it's a little bit more comfortable, right? And there are groups of people going around for Bikur Cholim who go and visit people who they don't know. And it can be really uncomfortable if you're not used to doing it. You should know that almost every patient does like it, even when strangers come in. Does? I remember.
You said does?
Yeah, almost all of them appreciate it. And if they don't, you'll know pretty quickly and you'll leave. But I remember in one Friday I was in the Tisch Hospital doing some rotation, and the NYU was really close to Williamsburg. So a bunch of chassidim came over, kids in high school, with their rabbi, all dressed for Shabbos, at like 2 in the afternoon. And they went around room to room, going and saying good Shabbos to everybody and saying the Dvar Torah. The random people, they have no idea. They peeked into the room and saw this. I mean, they don't have a sheet of the list of patients. They looked and peeked into every room, you know, to see if the person was Jewish and if they spoke Yiddish, because that's all they spoke. And to tell them the Dvar Torah. And if they didn't speak Yiddish, they just said good Shabbos, they gave them some candy and or whatever, some whatever they had with them. And people really, like, you have no idea the effect you can have on someone just by sitting and talking to them. So that's just, psychology aside, people, it really helps. People really like it. It's not easy to do, it's completely uncomfortable, don't get me wrong. But if you have the opportunity to do it, sometimes you're going to visit one person that you do know, and there's another person who you could try to mivagra chola, you'd be surprised the effect it has on people. They might not tell you on the spot, like, oh, thank you, they'll thank you, but you'd be surprised. So the Geser HaChaim, Rafael Michal Kaczynski just points out, he says, the wrong way to do bigger chola. He says, a lot of people come into Bikur Cholim, and they come and say, you know, you should use this doctor, and take this medication, and use this doctor, and use it. And he goes, and you drive the guy crazy. He's sitting in the hospital, he's sick. And you have no idea what you're talking about. Don't drive the guy crazy. This happens too, okay? This is halacha l'maisa. You're not supposed to drive people crazy, right? This makes sense, but he writes it because people do it. So I guess it's not so intuitive. Maybe it is when we say it clearly like that. But just need to be careful that you're just not driving the guy crazy. You're there to support them. So what are you trying to accomplish? What are the goals of Vikra Kolo?
Make a list. To bring comfort.
What do you mean comfort?
Comfort.
Like, you should feel better.
Yeah.
Like emotionally, right?
Not in the assurance that he'll be better, but...
No, not reassure. No, he'll feel better
right
now. Like, right now, he'll feel better because he has company. So let me just write, right? All right, I don't know that he'll be healed. And maybe even if he won't get better. So there's comfort.
It's escapism.
It's what?
Escapism.
What do you mean?
I mean, when someone comes to visit you, you're not focused on your illness or why you're there. You're just focusing on the person.
Broader comfort, meaning comfort.
Distraction.
Dissociate.
Right now, distraction. And why is distraction a mitzvah d'oraisa? It's possibly a mitzvah d'oraisa, right? The distracting someone's going to be a mitzvah d'oraisa.
Because if you're constantly focused on it, it can have a deleterious effect on your health.
Right. Comfort, you're helping him, right? Exactly. Yeah.
You're supposed to like, take care of his needs.
Also. Take care of his needs, absolutely.
Can we stretch it to say a refuah? In some indirect way?
Well, if you can do refuah, if you can do refuah and it's not being done, you have to go and do it.
You're not actually doing refuah, you're not qualified, but you're in some way or another providing. Because you could even say that emotional comfort is a refuah.
Right, like you said before, if you feel, we know that people who are depressed have worse courses in the hospital. People
and
who are not depressed
are
more likely to be depressed and more likely to have shorter lifespans. If you're there, you can prevent depression. Exactly. You can actually accomplish, you can save someone's life by accomplishing. You're right, exactly. Yeah?
Can I get them to do a mitzvah or something?
Okay, you can mizaka them to do a mitzvah.
What kind of needs can you do?
We'll talk about it in a second. You would be surprised, even in the modern hospital.
It strengthens camaraderie between Jews, like on a coin store or something like that.
I'm going to have a hard time saying camaraderie according to some reason is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I like it. We should do it. Yeah.
I'm not right.
Yeah.
I think it was like
David. Yes. Can I daven? Okay, we'll talk about that a lot. Right, can I daven from home? But you're right. No, you're right, because the halacha is you should go there and daven. We'll talk about why I can't daven from home. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Okay, so what needs can you fulfill? So A, back in the day, you can help them get up and go to bed. I mean, you can do things. You know, back in the day, you can actually, you know, bring them food. So today's hospitals, we do bring them food. Sometimes the food is a foot and a half away, right? Because you'd be surprised how sometimes when you have a hospital with thousands of patients, hundreds of patients, there are little things that this person's in pain, and I can bring the food a foot closer, and it'll be easier for him to eat it. That's taking care of his needs, right? He has to stretch to go get the tray that's on the wheels over there, but he broke his arm, so it's uncomfortable, and the person who brought the food in didn't realize that. Happens all the time. There are little things that you can help them do. You're more friendly with this person, you know, there's a man, and he needs help going to the bathroom, and all the nurses are female, and he feels he feels uncomfortable. If you went and you did it with him, it would make him feel bad. You can accomplish a lot physically. Also, this is not scientific, I don't have any proof for this. People say, I think it's true, that when patients have advocates there, family members, friends, they get treated better. Medically, treated better. I have no proof of this.
It's terrible.
It's likely true. Again, no data. Complete speculation.
The more
true. They get...
More morphine.
I know, I can't say that though. What?
You can't agree. More morphine?
Not more morphine, more better treatment. More attention by doctors and nurses. And assuming that more attention by doctors and nurses will get you healed quicker and more efficiently.
You're
asking psychological questions. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. I said no data. Completely speculative. I believe it. Some other people believe it. You believe it?
In elder care. No one ever comes to visit this person. Are you going to rush to change his diaper? If you know his family's coming all the time, and they're going to complain if they see the guy's been sitting and.
There are a lot of different. You're right.
They're going to change it.
There are a lot of different motivations. I'm not saying they're all. You're right. I think, again, no data, again, speculative. I strongly believe this, you strongly believe this, so that's at least two of us. It's not only because they were afraid of complaints. I think that's certainly there. There are some, they see that this person is being cared for, so emotionally they care for this person more. This is someone who is loved. This is someone's mother. This is someone's father. You feel more of a connection to them, right? It's sad, but when the homeless guy comes in, sometimes the nurses and doctors don't feel quite as a connection to him, who has nobody, you know, nobody caring for him, and so they feel less of a connection. Positively or not, unconsciously, subconsciously, whatever, it happens. So you can advocate for patients. So much so that some posting will allow you, if you find out that a relative is in the hospital on Shabbos, has come to the hospital on Shabbos, that you can drive to that hospital just to be there with them. Now, you're not a doctor, you're not a nurse, you're not doing anything medical for them. You're being there and advocating for them. Some posting will allow that because of this concern. It doesn't have to be true, right? It has to be concern, something. So we don't have to be sure. We can even think that it's true. And then it'll allow it. So there's a lot to do that you can do when you're there. And, you know, patients who, when they see people are coming, a lot of people are coming, the staff, it's just, that's human nature. Okay? So the question is, so right, so we talked about a couple of things. So comfort, taking care of needs, help them do mitzvos, which is certainly important, but not always applicable, if you can. So then they're probably exempt from mitzvos at that time if they can't do them on their own. But you can certainly do them, and if a person's sick and wants to do mitzvot so that he can, you know, have schusim and have more checkboxes, that's going to be good for him. Camaraderie, again, very important. It's nice. Not sure that's mitzvah d'oraisa, but it's certainly a wonderful thing, and maybe that's included in the mitzvah d'rabbanan. Even if there is a mitzvah d'oraisa that doesn't include this mitzvah d'rabbanan, may, and tefillah. Okay, so the question is, well, some of these things I can accomplish via other people, right?
When you say
tefillah, we'll talk about tefillah. No, whether bikur cholim in general is daraisa or bikur cholim is darabanan. So I'm saying even if bikur cholim is daraisa and I can't find a reason the camaraderie might come in there, there might be an expanded definition of bikur cholim in darabanan that does entail these other aspects. We'll talk about tefillah in a second. I'm going to leave that for the end because we'll talk about what are you davening for and what if you want to daven not for such positive things. So we'll talk about that maybe next time. It's going to get late. But so, right? A lot of these things, I don't actually have to be present for, right? I mean, I'm going to go to Bakar Cholim. Do I really need to be there? What if I could send someone else? So comfort, maybe or maybe not, right? Whether he sees me or he sees my brother, it might be different. Right? Taking care of his needs. I can send someone else to take care of his needs. So do I mekayim the mitzvah of Bakar Cholim when I send someone else to do it for me?
Well, don't you need, these are things you're describing that require physical activity on your own part.
Somebody
to do tefillin.
Oh, wow. Okay, very good. So you're saying why not, but let's say why yes first. So shlichus, right? A messenger. Right, you would have thought that I could accomplish, someone needs to go hand him his tray so he can go hand him his tray, right? I don't have to do it. I could send someone to do it. I could pay someone to do it. I could pay someone to sit there all day. I can have a full-time nurse sit there all day and take care of all of his needs. So do I fulfill the mitzvah via shlichus? So there's two problems. I'm sorry, what's your name again?
Mikey,
sorry. Tap. Okay. So he's pointing out that there are two problems. The first one problem you didn't mention is that why isn't the shliach, the messenger, also obligated to bikur cholim? Right, he should be doing bikur cholim too. So that's A. So do I fulfill the mitzvah when he's doing something he has to do anyway? Maybe, maybe not, but likely not. Yeah.
You also take into account if the mitzvah will be more enhanced if you're there.
Right. So we're assuming that we're taking care of his needs, right? Comfort, we said, may make a big difference. I mean, we're assuming this person can take care of his needs just as good as I can. Mm-hmm. For comfort, well, it depends who's there, right? Like, if the person sees me or he sees my brother, maybe he likes me better. So it's not the same. But let's start taking care of his needs. So Mikey points out an interesting thing. Shlichus is, right, I can send someone to do a mitzvah for me. Right? So the Ketzos points out that and you're referring to Ketzos, he said, well, and it's obvious, right? Can I have someone put on tefillin for me? No. Right? I can have him go and give tzedakah for me. Right? It's a mitzvah that has to be done, and I have to be the cause of that mitzvah. If it's a mitzvah that I have to physically do with my own body, can I have someone shake a lulav for me? No, right? Because I never shook that lulav. If I have a mitzvah to go and move that tray closer to him, that's the physical action I need to be doing, right? If we're assuming the question is now, is it that I have to do these things, or I have to make sure that they're taken care of? If it's a mitzvah that I have to do these things, so then shlichus isn't going to work, right? Because it's a mitzvah shebegufo. It's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon my body, my person, my physical activity. If the mitzvah is, look, you don't have to go, you just have to make sure it's taken care of, so then you can be done being sleepless. Most people are going to assume that it's a mitzvah shebegufo. It's something that you have to do on your own. It's like tefillin. It's like shaking a lulav. You have to go mevaker d'chola. You have to be there. You don't have to make, it's not that you have to make sure that the chola has friends and neighbors and visitors. It, you actually have to do it yourself. So it will depend on how you look up your cholim. So we'll say, we'll just put it here, is it a begufo? Meaning it requires physical action? Or is it more totsa, the outcome oriented, right? So it will depend on whether the mitzvah is to do it or the mitzvah is to accomplish it. But you're right, if the mitzvah is to do it, you cannot have a shliach do it. A couple of other nafkaminas right now that apply. Well, can you do bigger cholim via telephone? Right? So do you fulfill the mitzvah of bigger cholim via telephone? What do you think?
Comfort someone on the phone.
Yes.
You comfort someone on the phone?
Yeah.
You can yell at a nurse or a doctor on the phone. Probably not productive. people don't like to be yelled at on the phone.
Help him do mitzvahs on the phone.
You could help him do mitzvahs on the phone. You could daven with him. Right? You can't do the physical needs. So do you accomplish at least somewhat? So that's what Moshe says. He says, look, you do some things. You know.
Could you take those needs? If his needs are to constantly accept, you could help him over
time. Right, or if his needs are, pay my gas bill. Meaning, that could be his need too, right? Like, they're going to shut off the gas in his house, he's going to hope to come home next week, and his gas bill paid. He doesn't have his checkbook. So you can do that too.
Do you get the mitzvah?
Right, so Moshe says, look, it's not the best. It's not the best. You don't have the whole thing. But you accomplish what you can. And since Eliezer says it also, Rav Avadia Nechaveda says, look, you know, you really want the people to go. Why? Because when you see the person, it's Eino Doma Shmiel Ria. Hearing about something and seeing something isn't the same. Right? And when you go there, you'll get more impressed by if he's sick or what he needs. And it's really, 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 he really wants you to go. He really doesn't want you to pass off it as, I'm going to do it via telephone and that's it. Because going, he's not sure if you're, even via telephone you're able to accomplish something. Whether you're accomplishing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, I think he's going to say no. Did you do Gemilus Chasadim? In general, were you nice to somebody? Yes. And you certainly were Mekayim, you know, that general idea. Did you Mekayim Bikur Cholim? He's not sure. He really wants you to go. Ravadi Yosef. He's really not sure. Now look, the person's in Israel, the person's in Australia. I can't go. So I'm not obligated to go, right? I don't have to go, you know, I don't have to do that. But do I fulfill some mitzvah of Milus Chesed when I call them? I certainly do. Do I make them feel better? I certainly do. And as pointed out before, if I make them feel better, they might actually live longer. So, do I fulfill the precise mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? He says, maybe not. But it's still a wonder, you should still do it if you can't do anything else, but you should really try to make an effort to go.
Are we going to discuss what the line is when you are obligated to, you said, like, obviously in Australia or something, but why is that, I mean, how long is it, why is that obvious? When is...
Right, so... it's with every mitzvah, right? I mean, right now you could be getting stuck if you're sitting in shiur, right? So you could, right? I mean, when you're sitting in math or science, you could be learning Torah. So every mitzvah is going to have a give and take. We will talk about it a little bit soon, actually. But this is one of those general, you know, life mitzvahs. Like, how much out of your way are you going to inconvenience yourself, cost money, pay to accomplish a mitzvah at that time? But we'll talk about it a little bit, yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely a good question. In case whether or not you're actually involved in the mitzvah, it's complicated because if we're already pointing out five different aspects of the mitzvah, then it's not clear. There's no way to actually check off whether or not we're doing it, and the ramifications could be whether or not you can pater from doing another mitzvah.
Right. One osik b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. That's what you're saying. If a person is doing one mitzvah, he doesn't have to do another mitzvah at the same time.
If you're, you know, traveling.
You'd be exempt.
Would you by making the phone call? Would you be exempt from making the phone call?
Right, true. So maybe not, maybe yes, you're right. So Ravadi really wants to say the mitzvah is going. That's the mitzvah. It doesn't change in today's technological age. You really have to go. Now, in the Mishmilaria, it doesn't look like, what if you G-chat him? You do a video G-chat or you do Skype. So what's he going to say? In the Mishmilaria, I see him. It's still not the same. I mean, he really wants you to go, and he's not sure if you might fulfill the mitzvah, not going. He really, he's... The point of it, he wants you to go and not say, I'll just call the guy. If you can go, you should. If you can't go, so then you should call tonight. Okay, next time we'll talk about whether that mitzvah will allow you to violate certain prohibitions and about tefillah.
Thanks.